my son-in-law is a lawyer. He said, Ed Newman is a lawyer. Why don't you go to people of influence? I said, look, I've gone to people who have more influence than Ed Newman, mm-hmm. and there's nothing they can do about you because the Supreme Court passed this law. The Supreme Court, it's an unjust law, but yet everyone in the Wi-Fi, everyone who takes the law course has to read all about Dan Esther.
Now, did the party support the case? Who supported the case?
Well, the party would have supported it if he had wanted it.
Uh-huh.
They would have.
Well, who took the case to the Supreme Court?
To the Supreme Court, Lowe Sherman's,
Oh, the Committee for the Defense
of the Thornborn. Uh-huh. Of the Thornborn.
And
Abney Green at that time was the head of it, you know. They took the case to the Supreme Court.
Well, what started the... How did the whole proceedings and the charges against him start? And then
we had
a 3-year period.
Yeah. Well, we had a lot of stupid in the party, you know, but they had one guy testified who had been in the party for 14 years, and he was a stupid all the time.
Testified at Dan's hearing?
He testified in Seattle about somebody.
Mm.
But here we had some of the guys that were revealed as stupid who had belonged to our group.
Mm-hmm.
And prejudice is a great one for talking, but it's hard to explain a person as like him. In some ways he was a charming guy, in some ways he was nothing but a... You see, he liked to pose as a guy who loved poetry, a guy who loved this, that, and the other. He didn't know too much about those things. But those are the things he thought were there. But he was a friend of the Soviet Union. Oh, yes, goodbye.
Did he disagree with you when you were critical?
No, he didn't disagree on that. Only that we kept going to all theater on Washington and Maynard, where they showed all the Soviet films. And we went faithfully to all. Until finally I said, look, some of them, when we saw Ivan did the Terrible and all that, so, and then we saw the ballet, and I saw Swan Lake until I said, Swan doesn't die and stop. So I said, look, I'm not going to go to see Swan Lake again. So he said, I'll report you to the Soviet Union. I said, go ahead and report me to the Soviet Union. I'm getting sick of their films and everything. It's all about, some of them in the beginning were very good peasants,
mm-hmm.
and gypsies were very, very good. Some of the early revolutionists,
mm-hmm.
really were very, very good. But afterward, they got to be kind of very mediocre.
Well, Barbara, mm-hmm. during all of this, they started the hearings against him in the 1953, in other words.
Yeah.
How did you feel about it and about his possible deportation? Did you ever think of going to Bulgaria?
No, never. My family were here, my roots were here. And Dan didn't mean that much to me.
And was the case viewed by, since Rose Chernin handled it, I assume that they saw it as an attack on...
I think, Rose Chernin, they had their lawyers to go over, you know, they had able lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
And the lawyer from in Washington, who could plead before the Supreme Court, he handled it, he did the best he could with it. But the Supreme Court had passed that law.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't challenge... City Hall.
Mm-hmm.
The Supreme Court. Well, Vinson was the
mm-hmm.
He was the one that killed the Rosenbergs.
Yeah.
You know, he was a son of a bitch. He was a fascist. And that was Truman. In the book, Plain Speaking, the guy writes about about Harry Truman. You know, Harry Truman did like to read. Harry Truman had some... You know, pleasant aspect. But Harry Truman was nothing but a son of a bitch anyway.
Yeah, and a murderer.
Of course. And so was Eisenhower. Look, Angela Davis, with all the millions who were supporting her, the Rosenbergs had 10 times more all over the world that the Rosenbergs died and everything. Because, for one thing, they didn't have the kind of a lawyer that Angela Davis had.
Well, it was a different time period, too.
And not only that, a different jury and a different judge. And Judge Kaufman, who was the Jewish judge, the Jewish attorneys who brought him in and everything. So the Rosenbergs had no chance.
Well, Barbara, do you see, are you more optimistic now? I mean, you've been involved in the socialist movement for some 60-some years. Do you feel more or less optimistic than when you first became a socialist, do you think?
Yes, I do, and I'll tell you why. Because more young people are beginning to question. That's the thing that gives me optimism. That more young people. Then besides that, dear, that with all their weaknesses, those socialist countries that are already in existence are showing the difference. I think it's only the wind. Are showing the difference that I pointed out to Tommy of socialism or capitalism. And more with the growing unemployment, which is concomitant just with capitalism, and there's nothing more frightening to a worker than no job for you, no jobs, we're not taking any jobs or anything. That's your bread and butter, and you can't live without it. So, like someone said to me once, you know, what's remarkable about Dorothy, she doesn't care anything at all about money. Now, I said, you know, you've said something a little bit silly. Well, what do you mean? You know she doesn't. I said, Dorothy has a very healthy respect for it. Without money, she couldn't buy bread, could she? She couldn't live. She doesn't worship money. It isn't an end in itself, but it's a means for something, and that's very important. There's quite a difference. But to say that, you're talking about someone in an idealistic way, and ideas only exist in the mind.
Well, Barbara, tell me, what do you think about the various liberation movements that haven't been connected to the party? Like, first, the Black Movement. And
I don't like the SLA.
The SLA. And the Women's Movement, which were all liberation movements.
I think they all contribute their part. I think they did. I think Women's Lib did something. Of course, they also threw off some of the shackles. Just like the Pankhurst or whatever their name was, the sisters in England.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But I think they did a marvelous job. When they, you see, we lived in Colorado, and Colorado had the vote for women, you know, long before it became the national thing all over. But I spoke to many of those who were fighting for suffrage, and we went on the picket line for them and everything, but they did a tremendous job. I've often wondered about some of those early women like Susan. You know that her granddaughter was a member of the Communist Party?
Mm.
Did you know that?
No, I didn't. Yeah. She's the one in San Francisco?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought all of those, even when I read of the women in American history who were just more for justice and more and were alert and were active in that, I thought it was a great thing. The thing I was disappointed in is that Pennsylvania, named after Penn, was supposed to be all for peace, and I understand there's very little peace and justice in Pennsylvania. There's an awful lot of crookedness.
Barbara, what about the peace movement in the 1960s? What was your involvement then?
I always supported it. My God, I remember picketing at that time. I could walk. I walked 4 miles to Santa Monica and turned to Barbara and said, what was it? He said, 1, 2, 3, 4, take the bomb and throw it. 1, 2, 3, take the bomb and throw it away. And everything against, and all the hill. And I was at Century City when that big blowout came. We just got away just a few minutes. before all hell. Dick had a run like everything, his long legs, because the policeman almost had hold of his arm to arrest him.
Was most of your anti-war involvement within the party, or did you join other groups outside the party? Do you recall?
Well, I did belong for a time to the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, because I thought all of them were doing a good thing and they were. Caroline, by the way, is a member of the International League for Peace and Freedom. I did join that for a time, you know. And mostly it was in the party that I supported all of them.
Because there was all those, that coalition through PAC for a long time and all the marches and rallies were.
Yes.
But most of your activity was
I even supported the Utopian Party.
That was
right after the Epic.
Oh, the Upton Sinclair?
Yeah. Well, the Utopian came right in after the Epic. I supported the Epic.
Uh-huh.
And that's another thing that I thought the party made a terrible mistake, because they said Upton Sinclair Hitler. That was a terrible thing. I was furious about that. And I did speak up, Turner. Not as much as I should have. I swallowed a lot, but once I was alert that it wasn't so, then I spoke up.
Now, what about the black movement in the 60s, Barbara? Because earlier you had argued against black self-determination, but some of the early aspects of the black movement were very...
I always supported that the black people must have the same rights and privileges in every way they could have a right to live wherever they please if they could afford it, and they couldn't if they couldn't afford it anyway, and every other thing. But I never supported black belt. They would
because
have
in
a...
In the 60s, the much of the more militant black movement was very nationalistic also.
Yes, I know. It still is. It still is. But, see, I had some black friends, and personally I was very fond of them. The only one that I really had was that I was with, was Pete, because he was so, you know, for self-determination in the black belt, and he couldn't, you know. But I knew with what terror he lived once he came into my house, you know. It must have been almost 12 o'clock. And he said, can I spend the night? And I said, of course, what's happened? He said, the police had been after him for nothing at all.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I knew that with what terror they lived. I met Bielig at that time, too, Bielig Gilbert, the actress.
Mm-hmm.
She said, I remember the first time I heard her speak. She said that through the crack in their hut, she had seen that they hung her father. And no, he had done nothing. They accused him of rape. And all of those things, all Willie McGee.
Mm-hmm.
My God, I remember that time. I remember that time with Willie McGee, everything I read about him. He was a wonderful guy.
Mm-hmm. I remember that too.
Yes. And everything went then. He walked the picket line.
Mm-hmm.
He did this.
Well, in later years, weren't there fewer and fewer Asians and blacks coming into the party than there had been in the earlier days in the 30s?
Well, how could anyone ever really tell? You never really knew who was an Asian.
Mm-hmm.
Like this guy, Lee Rosser, you would never think that all the time, you know, that he had been, the police had something on him, he had done something. So then they made a stool pigeon of him, and then, you know, he began to slide down the ladder, because in the beginning he was a nice guy. He got more and more, he became more and more debased.
Well, what's your attitude towards the party today and its position and its viability as a meaningful social movement?
I don't think it has very much influence at all. I really don't think so. And when I hear thus making a speech, he said that the influence of the Communist Party is 100 times greater than the attendance at the meetings, you know, or the voting, where they fare very, very poorly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, so far, I can't see that more people are seeking for it, the answer in, perhaps in socialism, but a socialism that's democratic. See, even Buckley, who is, you know, such a, he is a corrupt guy. He wrote in his National Review, he said, wonder what the followers of Gus Hall would think if they knew that he stays only in the finest hotels and travels only first class, which is true. Which is true.
So you see the party as being very corrupt now.
I don't think the party is corrupt, but I think that Gus Hall is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the party as such is, but I think they're confused and too much afraid to be critical.
Mm-hmm.
Because any time you're afraid to be critical of anything, I always remember my father, when I said, Papa, how could it die? And my he said, Maturnish Kregen. Maturnish, you dare not question. You dare not question. And that's the same thing. And any time you dare not question, you better damn well question, because they're hiding something and you better find out what it is.
Mm. Well, Barbara, is there anything else you would like to add? I still have
just as firmly in the opinion that socialism is the answer, and socialism must come. And I feel just as strongly, even perhaps more, that it will. The 14 countries that are already socialist, with all their weaknesses, are pointing a way that's far superior to capitalism.
How do you think it will come in this country?
You see, this will be the last bastion of capitalism, and the strongest, and this will be the hardest one. But if they could be beaten in Vietnam, they're not unbeatable. If they could produce a Watergate and get rid of the most corrupt and horrible creature that ever disgraced the White House, Nixon, then there's hope for that. And if Watergate could come about, and others will come and say, even Senator Church now speaking up against the CIA in spite of the Standard Oil Committee had to come out and say, well, the CIA did some of the atrocious. They had first said, the Rockefeller Committee had said, no, there was no proof of anything. Now they say that they did not really plan the murder of John Kennedy. They say they didn't, but I'm damn sure, I'm sure that the CIA and the Pentagon had John Kennedy killed.
Well, do you think that these kinds of exposures are going to have any effect on the general public?
Yes, the accumulation of them, you know, and then when people's respect for those laws break down, then they won't stand in awe of them. They won't say anyone accused of it as he must be guilty, or they wouldn't, you know, how would they? Because they know they are corrupt. So they would go along with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Watergate is a wonderful thing. If not for Watergate, Nixon would have brought fascism into this country. And now this McClellan in Arkansas is trying to bring about some laws that are so horrifying that they're practically the fascist laws. That you're not allowed to do this, and you're not allowed this, and you're not allowed. Absolutely horrifying. I spoke to Frank Wilkinson, and I said, Frank, shouldn't this be your new thing now that the Un-American Committee is gone? He says, I'm working on it. I said, well, I'm glad you are.
Well, what do you see, how do you think that a socialist movement could be made into a mass movement the way the Communist Party was in the 30s? Do you think there's any...
Well, as... Look, right now, the unemployment figure now is over 9 million, you know. That's an awful lot of people out of work. Now, you see, the capitalists did learn how to restabilize themselves. For instance, they learned a lesson from the 30s. Now you have Social Security, you have unemployment insurance, you have old age pension, you have welfare. All of these are things to take the pressure off, you know, and not make people, because they knew that if that continued, they'd break down those walls. In Arkansas, in the 30s, when 3,000 people stormed the warehouses and said, "Feed us, damn you, or we'll break your warehouses down," they fed them in a hurry. They saw then, you know, that what happened in France could happen here, you know. After all, royalty there was God, and yet look, if they could take the life. Well, Charles I showed it in England. Of course, it brought back Charles II, who then killed all the people who killed his father. You know, but anyway, they take Charles I, didn't they? So you never know. Now, it's just as hard to say what will put an end to royalty in Britain, because the British people are poor people. I don't have an awful lot of respect for people, for poor people, and yet I know the poor people will have to sometimes be. Because look at them living on a bloater a day, when Her Majesty, even when she, one of the richest women in the world, when she has a castle fixed, the people have to pay for the repairs and everything. It's so outrageous, or everyone who has any of that royal blood, which is not the best one either, you know, get the subsidy. And I think, now, when the people, see, that's the hardest thing of all. And you see what's happening in England. Here, at least, they have a little more chance for something, you know. They used to say that if you only try here, you have a chance, don't you? Mm-hmm. But in England, you don't often rise above your station in life, you know. Not very often does a poor man become a lord or another little account, you know.
Well, how do you see a socialist revolution occurring in the United States? Just a gradual evolution, or do you see there being a real revolution here?
Well, I think all of these things will help bring it about. Because now these... and I don't deliver the college movement either. Because they learn to speak, too, with a language. Most of them are sons of workers.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't like it used to be, you know, where it was a worker songster thing, you know, only the privileged could get into. You know, workers' sons are coming into the universities. It's true that some of them go in there only to feather their own nest. It's true, but they're not all that way. And you never know where something will begin to stir people up. Just like in the 30s, the vast unemployment, the hopelessness, is the driving force brought about the changes, you know. See, Roosevelt was smart enough, you know, found the colonies or the camps for the young people where they could work and everything, no matter how little they got, but it was, they were off the streets and they were getting food and shelter. And they knew that they had to do something about it. Well, but now, see, with a Freudian who doesn't understand all these social things, he doesn't really understand anything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But he's in many ways, he's a very shrewd guy. You see, he's trying to play to the gallery now, you know. Who's support is he getting? He's getting the support of the Rockefellers, isn't he? Well, there was a time, sure enough, and the Rockefeller couldn't have gotten a job as a dog catcher. Now he's the vice president of Dina. You know what they are. See, the one thing, the tax system. If these people were taxed in the court, could Rockefeller ever get that? Could Howard Hughes ever have $1 billion? Could Rockefeller have those billions? He couldn't, because if he were paying his just share of the taxes.
Well, it sounds, Barbara, that you're as optimistic now as you were when you first joined the Socialist Party in 1916.
Well, I think I'm more optimistic now, because at that time what gave me optimism was the Soviet Union. Because I thought it the most powerful oligarchy that ever lived, the most powerful, the most brutal, the more... Well, you couldn't think of anything more. They call themselves the dark people.
Mm-hmm.
If they could... In 1905, there was a kind of a my revolution, and they shot down those protesters. And all those protesters came just to ask the little father to help them.
Mm-hmm.
He was only revolutionists. 1905. From 1905 to 1917, it's only 12 short years. Where is that Tsar now? Where is all the things that Russia wants to fight? Where are they now? And they gave rise to other things. I was very, very tickled, you know, when most of them were supporting Stalin, and Stalin said about Tito, I have but to shake my finger and there'll be no Tito. But he shook his finger and Tito was still there. And they have a kind of a socialism in Yugoslavia. It's not like it is in others. It was a very poor country. But nevertheless, nobody is going hungry.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone is getting free medical care.
But so your early optimism was based on the success of the Russian Revolution.
That's right.
And what is your optimism today based on?
The optimism today is that the example set by the socialist countries, that after all, this is what they do have, will also be a very important thing.